I'm Sean Corcoran. Standing atop Miller's Hill in Provincetown is a barn that for more than a century has attracted some of America's most talented art students and instructors. It's often called the Hawthorne Barn or just the Art Barn. It was built by painter Charles Hawthorne at the turn of the 20th century. And its construction is considered the beginning of Provincetown's place as an art colony. But just a few years ago, the barn was in danger of being sold and turned into condominiums. Then some heroes stepped in. A group that became known as 20 Summers purchased it and worked to guarantee its preservation. Two of the people who were key in creating the 20 Summers group and saving the barn and bringing it back to life are joining me. Welcome Joshua Prager and Julia Glass.
Hi, Sean.
Thank you for having us.
I'm glad you could join me. Julia, could you describe the barn for us, what it looks like inside and what it feels like knowing its place in American art history?
Well, you gave a great sort of a little keyhole look at the barn in your description. One of the wonderfully paradoxical things about the Hawthorne Barn is that it's one of the most important landmarks of the history of Provincetown, and yet it's hidden at the top of this hill. You'd think it's at this very high dune and scrub landscape way up above the town, right in the center of the town, but you can't see it unless you're way out on the harbor. So people in Provincetown who've been there for decades have heard of it, but don't really know where it is until they venture down this dead-end road and find it. And one of the great pleasures we have is welcoming people to our events who've heard about it for years, never seen it, and walk into this space that is this vaulted, raw wood, rustic space, surrounded by trees, and at the end, and Josh, correct me if I'm exaggerating, but is a 20 by 20 foot window that looks
I think
into the trees.
15 by 15, but it's remarkable.
Okay. Sorry, fake news there. But it's this magnificent window against which we stage all our conversations and concerts, and they're always at that cusp of evening when the light is changing and the birds are kind of twittering before they go to sleep. And every musician that has played in that barn for us has begged to come back. The acoustics are astonishing, but it is really just a big empty wooden space that still bears these splatters of paint and the hand print of a famous artist. And you really, I am not a believer in ghosts, but it is a place filled with the spirits of the artists who worked there for over a century.
And Josh, that window that Julia was talking about, I mean, that's key. That's what Provincetown artists talk about, the light, right? The reflection and refraction of light off the water, and that window and how it's positioned is perfect for the fine artist. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's north-facing, so that no matter the time of day, the light is always sort of cascading through it. And it is very, very beautiful to be in there. As Julie mentioned, it's also very dramatic at the end of the day. And so we make sure to have our event at around 7 o'clock so that the light itself is sort of an actor in whatever is going on. But yes, people made sure the reason that Charles Hawthorne built the barn where he did, it was on the highest point in Provincetown. And also the window was facing north so that the room was always sort of suffused with light.
Josh, I gave a little of the barn's history, but I'd like to hear more from you. What do you know about its past?
Well, in a century, it only passed through very few hands. Charles Hawthorne, who was this impressionist painter and also the son of a sea captain, he built it in 1907. One of his students then took over, Hans Hoffmann, the very famous abstract expressionist painter. He took over and started teaching in the barn. And then over the decades that followed, it only passed through, I think, two more hands. One was a painter in Baltimore named Morris Davidson, and then the pop artist Peter G. Other people spent time in the barn, and a lot of them were very famous, as you know. One of them was Norman Mailer, who rented the barn for a few summers. But in terms of the teaching, those were sort of the key people. But in terms of students, there was a remarkable who's who studied there. Norman Rockwell was a student there, and he has a beautiful description of the barn in his autobiography. He says, The wind blew through the open windows, which ran all around the barn-like room. I began to whistle. No picky brushes for me, I thought. No grays, browns, or muddy blacks. Color. And he puts color in capital letters. And Hans Hoffman, of course, was there. And Lee Krasner did collage there. And it just went on. And a lot of the other very famous people, like Jackson Pollock and Tennessee Williams, who were there, they didn't quite study, but they had cameos there, like Pollock got drunk in the barn and Tennessee Williams danced in the barn and Robert De Niro Sr. fell in love with Robert De Niro's mother in the barn. So all sorts of incredible things went on there. And we just wanted to make sure to revive the barn and open it up to another generation of P-Towners.
Yeah, tell us about that. Where does 20 Summers come into this narrative of the barn? How'd you discover the barn and create an opportunity to preserve it?
Well, as Julie mentioned, a lot of people who love P-Town don't know about the barn, and I was one of those people. I grew up going to the Cape my whole life. I spent time in North Truro for many, many years, ever since I was 6 years old. I worked as a waiter in P-Town, and I never knew about the barn. And then I was hoping to buy a cottage. Decades later, I became a writer, and I thought it would be fun and special to have a place in town to paint. But anything on the water was very, very expensive. So I kind of expanded my search inland. And a few blocks inland is this barn, and I saw it, and I couldn't believe it. Why is this place for sale? I found it very depressing. This was in 2009. I thought it ought to be preserved. And long story short, I had the idea that I could create a nonprofit and get to spend some time in the barn myself, and also to sort of have the barn fixed up and turned into a center for the arts that people could enjoy. And my partners, I reached out to Ricky O'Patterney and to Julia Glass, who's here with us today, and the three of us created 20 Summers. And it took a few years, but we had to get almost 10 permits. It was a ridiculous thicket of permits. We got them all. The town backed us, and we opened the barn door to the public in 2014. So we're coming up to our fourth season. I'll just mention one more thing. We needed to come up with a way. We couldn't handle it all financially ourselves. We're a tiny little organization. So we found a wonderful couple who lived right next door to the barn to buy the barn from us, to pay for its renovation, and to allow us use of the barn for 1 month of every year. And so for 1 month every spring, from mid-May to mid-June, we host a festival in the barn, and that's what we call 20 Summers.
And I think, you know, we also might mention that in addition to the 5 weekends of what we call conversations and concerts, we also give 5-day artist residencies between those weekends where we invite usually visual artists, but in this case we have a musician coming 1 week who use that barn to work in and to live in and get to experience it as a place to live and create.
A remarkable musician, Duncan Sheik. So we're very excited.
What about, if I remember correctly, when you first came into town, Joshua, and started to talk about this and your plan for the barn, you were met with some skepticism. And you had some work to do in Provincetown.
I was met with a lot of skepticism. It was bizarre because I was trying to do something that was a good thing as a person who loves towns. Yeah, people were very wary, and I guess they had seen a lot of people swoop in and convert their sort of jewels into private condominiums. And they worried that I might be doing that with what is really their most precious jewel. And it took a lot of time to convince the people. But once they realized that I really was trying to do something good here, the town got behind us. And in fact, the town voted to give a grant, a large grant, to help us in our renovation, which was really a wonderful vote of confidence. And in the first few years, when we were gearing up for our seasons, it was very complicated. At the licensing meetings, we'd have to basically pray that the people would vote to allow us to have our licenses. And now, thankfully, that has become really a wonderful little formality. People realize that we are considerate of the neighborhood. We don't party through the night, and we allow people to live their lives unbothered by us, but they've also come to see that they love the program, and we're bringing very special people to their little nook. And so it's now, we really are partners with the town, and that is a great blessing because we couldn't do it without them.
So Julia Glass, 20 Summers creates programming in the barn, as Joshua was saying, music, art, discussions, things like that. And as we said, it's only for a few weeks a year. What are your goals? What are you trying to achieve?
Well, Provincetown is a very culturally colorful town, as you know. But while there's a lot of music and visual art and color and partying, I mean, it's a place people really come to unwind and be uninhibited. What we're bringing into the town is, I think, a wider spectrum of cultural events. We bring in authors and activists and politicians who may, in fact, never have been to Provincetown because it's more remote than a lot of people realize. Mm-hmm. And we bring concerts that are a combination of classical. We love doing classical concerts that feature literary readings in them. And, in fact, you have recorded at least one of those. And we bring in indie rock performers, some who are actually local to the Cape. Josh, remind me of the sisters that we brought in a couple of years ago.
The Parkinson sisters?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But we also bring in musicians from farther afield, from New York, like Duncan Sheik, the musician and composer who will be there for a residency and then a concert this season. So people really appreciate that we deepen and broaden the kind of evening events that one can go to without traveling at 45 minutes down the Cape, for instance. And with the fast ferry from Boston now, which is wonderful, I mean, it only takes an hour and a half from port to port, people can also come for a day to Provincetown from Boston and finish out that day with an event at the barn, which is over by 9:30, catch the last ferry back to Boston, I think.
I just want to be clear. I believe it's the Parkington sisters, so I want to be sure I get their name right. They're so well known.
It's Parkington.
Yeah, locally. Right. Okay. So you started to talk a little bit about the audience. So who have you found? Is it mostly people coming from Boston or off Cape, or you're doing these on the shoulder season? So I'd imagine you got a lot of Cape Cod people too.
Say that the earliest part of our season, which begins in the middle of May, we have a number of year-round residents of the Outer Cape, some of them retirees or people who do come for weekends year-round. But by the time Memorial Day weekend rolls around, there are a lot of people opening up their houses for the summer, and then we do get the occasional day trippers. I actually took the ferry over last year and overheard a couple talking about how they were going to their first event at 20 Summers, and they had planned their trip around that event. So so we get a variety of people.
Josh, did you have something to add there?
I was just going to say that as the seasons have gone by, more and more people are coming also from off the Cape. And I think that's a result of our website, which is just 20summers.org. People can... twosummers.org. People can watch our events, the ones they haven't gone to, because we have them filmed and Comcast pays to have them edited for us and put up on our site. And a lot of people are discovering these events and so are making a weekend out of it. And that's great for us because we're bringing really special people to town who are coming really, I think they're drawn by the history of the space. And, we're not able to pay them vast amounts of money. We're a tiny little organization. So not only is the town stepping up to welcome these people, and, you know, we have innkeepers donating rooms, and we have Cape Air flying people there for free. And, you know, it's basically a lot of volunteers, but also the guests themselves are accepting far less than they normally do to come to our place, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, all of the writers that we invite to come and do events come simply for what we give them is two nights in an inn and their transportation, and some of these writers normally take fairly large speaking fees, so we are very grateful for that. Mm-hmm. And as Josh said, it took us a little longer than we thought to be welcomed as a member of the community. But now that we are, for instance, those innkeepers who donate rooms to us, they tell their guests all about us. They promote our events for us. And we are a member of the Chamber of Commerce. So there's a lot of give and take now between us and much longer standing businesses and arts organizations in the community.
How many people can you fit in the barn for an event? And are you selling out?
We actually have already sold out three of our events at this point. We do have a maximum occupancy of the barn, which is around 75, and we have to figure in our little sort of skeleton staff. So usually we sell tickets to 65 people or so. It's a very intimate space, and that's part of what makes seeing or listening to something in that barn so special, is that you're part of a very small audience.
And I was just going to say, our first year we had, I just remember like one event, we had Steven Pinker and Rebecca Goldstein, this remarkable couple there, and there were maybe five people in the barn. And it was a humiliating thing for me because I had reached out to these people to come. And now that is not the case. Now almost all of our events sell out. And that is a great blessing. So if people want to come, they really do have to get their tickets sooner rather than later.
We're talking about the Hawthorne Art Barn in Provincetown in 20 Summers, the group that has taken over the barn for a certain amount of time each year to have programming there. We're going to go through the event schedule and talk about WCAI being there to record some of those events when we get back, but we need to take a quick break. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Point. I'm your host, Sean Corcoran. We're talking about the Hawthorne Art Barn in Provincetown, which, when it was built, really marked the beginning of Provincetown as an art colony. Now it's being used again by artists and writers and musicians, and a group called 20 Summers is with me. At least two members of the trio of 20 Summer founders are joining me now to talk about the barn and the programming that will be there in the month of May. Let's talk about that schedule. But first, let me mention, WCAI also has some history with the barn. So back in the late 2000s, I produced a story for NPR about its history and the fact it was for sale and could be turned into condos. And since 20 Summers became involved, WCAI has been involved recording and rebroadcasting some of the events that you're hosting there. This will be the fourth year WCAI has recorded events at the barn, and I want to talk about the events in a general way, but first let's go through what WCAI will be rebroadcasting. This year we're actually recording and rebroadcasting three programs, and Joshua Prager is with me and Julia Glass to talk about this. Saturday, May 13th, we're going to record a program called How Drawing Provincetown Shaped Hans Hoffman. Who wants to tell me about that?
I'll tell you about that. So one thing that is very exciting for us is obviously the famous people who have spent time and worked and taught in the barn. And sort of right at the top of that list is Hans Hoffman, the great painter. And most people know Hoffman for his, great big bold paintings on canvas. But before that, for about 20 years, from 1914 until about 1934, his drawing was sort of primary in his work. And at the heart of that drawing was his work in Provincetown, which was really influenced by the light in P-Town. So we're going to have these two very special and knowledgeable people, Marcel Polemic and Karen Wilkin, people who contributed to his catalog Raisonné that recently came out. They will be discussing this for us and showing slides and helping people really understand what took place in this very special space. So we're excited about that. They have actually been with us before. We really take pains to incorporate into our programming events that are particular to P-Town into the barn as well. And the Hans Hoffman Trust in New York City has helped make that happen for us. So we're really excited to have this event.
And that is May 13th, Saturday, May 13th, and WCAI will rebroadcast that show on our show, The Point, on Thursday, June 1st at 9 a.m. And then another one that we'll be recording and rebroadcasting is May 20th, Two Literary Lights, it's called, Richard Russo and Hannah Tinty in Conversation. Tell me about that one.
Well, as a novelist myself, one of my greatest pleasures in planning the season is choosing which fiction writers I hope to bring to the barn. And Richard Russo is, I mean, he's a legend. And people, you may know him from his Pulitzer Prize-winning epic novel Empire Falls, or his wonderful earlier novel Nobody's Fool, which was made into a movie with Paul Newman and Jessica Tandy, or his novel Cape Magic, which was set on the Cape. I mean, he's a prolific writer, also a screenwriter, so I'm really looking forward to hearing him talk about straddling that life between Hollywood and the literary East Coast. And Hannah Tinti is a very talented young novelist whose first novel, The Good Thief, won a number of prizes, and she has just come out with a second novel that's being widely praised called The 12 Lives of Samuel Hawley. And I haven't read it yet. I will by then, but it is a retelling of the myth of Hercules set in a New England fishing town. So it couldn't be more appropriate for this. She's also well known as the award-winning editor, founder of a literary journal called One Story, which publishes one story per issue and has really helped make the careers of a number of literary writers. She's also just a lot of fun, and what we're actually hoping is that Hannah and Rick will reprise something they did at an event in Maine where they sang Bruce Springsteen songs together. There's actually a little clip of it circulating somewhere out there on the internet, and she said if they can practice a little beforehand, they promise to have a little musical feature there. So I know that's going to be a very entertaining evening.
A lot of fun. May 20th, that event is, and we'll rebroadcast that on WCAI's The Point on Thursday, June 8th. And the third event that CAI is involved with is Telling Tales in a World of Alternative Facts. What's going to happen there?
So that will bring together the novelists Juno Diaz and Jacqueline Woodson, who are both very influential writers in the literary world. Juno Diaz is best known for his Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao. He's a MacArthur winner, and he actually teaches writing at MIT, so he's a Boston-area writer, and he's done a lot of activism in the Dominican American community in this country, and I know he wants very much to talk about what it means to be a writer of color at this moment in our national story. And Jacqueline Woodson has won several awards for her memoir, Brown Girl Dreaming, and her recent novel, Another Brooklyn. And she is very active in the gay community, much loved in Provincetown, where she actually lived year-round for 5 years at one point. She now lives in Brooklyn. But I think this might be the first time that the two of them are really together in conversation, although they know each other. So I'm very excited about that event as well. And I want to add here that another great partnership we have at 20 Summers is with the Provincetown Bookshop, which is one of the last standing independent bookstores on the Cape. Mm-hmm. And they come to all our literary events and sell the author's books. So that's, and that all gives our audience a nice opportunity to actually linger and chat with the authors that we feature.
That's what I love about these events that I've attended, that you have access to these amazing writers and artists. And yes, if you bring the book, they'll most likely sign it for you and have something to say. The interaction in that special place is really great and very hard to come by. Were you going to say something, Joshua Prager?
Well, I was just going to say that what makes the barn most special to me is that it's really what it used to be like, long before T-Town became this hubbub of excitement, you know, this hub of excitement, excuse me, with all the hubbub and craziness on Commercial Street, which I love. As I say, I've been going there for 30 years.
Sure.
But it's wonderful to know what it was like beforehand. As a step back in time, it's absolutely quiet. Right outside is a little sand dune, and you can kind of look up at the stars. It's very special. And, you know, obviously change is part of life, but it's nice to be able to step back in time. And the barn is really kind of the last holdout. And it's not allowed to change because it's part of the National Historic registry of places and all that, you're not allowed to change it. And the people who renovated the barn for us, Daniel Kaiser and Adam Moss, who own the barn, they did so very beautifully, keeping all of that in mind. So it's an opportunity to see the way Pigtown used to be.
Julia Glass and Joshua Prager of 20 Summers, we have just about 5 minutes left, but I know you have a full season. Are there, maybe give me a few more of the highlights this season at the Hawthorne Barn, the fourth season.
Sure. Well, at the heart of our programming is music, and we have a lot of concerts. We have a concert just about every weekend except the first weekend, and there are two special concerts, for example, over Memorial Day weekend, just on either side of the Juno Diaz event you just mentioned. One of them is a classical concert with the Aria Ensemble, and it's infused with readings and allusions to Moby Dick, which is my favorite novel, and some of you out there may have heard of it, and that's going to be very special. And then right on the other side of the Juno Diaz event with Jacqueline Woodson is a concert by Emily Wells. I had first come to learn of her when I was watching Letterman one night, and we had an incredible performer a few seasons ago named Tacky King. Tacky introduced us to Emily, and Emily is coming, and we are just thrilled. Her music is very, very beautiful. So those are two concerts just to mention that I'm particularly excited for. And then there's an event on Friday night, June 2nd, A Conversation, which should be really, really something. It features David France and Andrew Sullivan. David France wrote a book. First, he had a documentary film called How to Survive a Plague, and then a book with the same title that's all about the U.S. AIDS crisis. It is I haven't read the book, but judging from all I know about it, including the review that was written on the front page of the New York Times Book Review by Andrew Sullivan, which is why we reached out to him, it's really a staggering piece of scholarship. And so they will be discussing that, and I'm very, very excited for that. So those are just a few of the events that we're really looking forward to.
Okay. Julia Glass, did you have any events you wanted to highlight?
Well, definitely those. I also want to say that our opening weekend, after the first night with the discussion about Hans Hoffmann, we have the memoirists Alicia Abbott and Joan Wickersham coming together. That's Saturday, May 13th. Alicia Abbott wrote the memoir Fairyland, which is about growing up with an openly bisexual father in the days of Haight Ashbury. And her father did die of AIDS ultimately, but she captures that free love period and how it sort of segued into the national crisis of AIDS. And then Joan Wickersham wrote a beautiful memoir called The Suicide Index, which is actually somewhat humorous as well as very moving, about losing her father to suicide. They're also very accomplished writers in other spheres. Joan Wickersham is a columnist for the Boston Globe and also a fiction writer. And I'm really looking forward to that. And again, that's on Saturday, May 13th.
And the fourth.
I'll just mention that the first night, Friday, May 12th, it's all free. So first we have a party that's being sponsored by the Lobster Pot, where there will be delicious food. And people can come and just spend time in the barn and see what it's like and have some yummy food. And then the event discussing Hans Hoffmann's drawing and how his drawing influenced him, that too is free. So that's great. And it's just a little opportunity for me to mention that the reason these things are free is because they're being donated to us. And we survive completely on the donations and sort of sponsorship of people out there. So if anyone wants to get involved and to help out, we would be thrilled. And our website is just 20summers.org. It'll tell you what to do if you go there.
So
In fact, volunteers for 20 Summers get a ticket to come to an event they work for. So so sign up to volunteer and you get to come to these events for free.
That big party that you're kicking the season off with on Friday, May 12th, people still have to register even though it's free, right, Josh?
That's right. And then they will get food from, as it said in Pigtown, the Lobster Pot. So I'm very excited about that.
Okay. We discussed some of the events coming up during the next 4 weeks or so, but people can go to the website 20summers.org. That's 20summers.org to get the full rundown and find out about tickets and all that. It's a very special place. I hope you do get to go inside and get a sense of it. So let me thank my guests, Joshua Prager and Julia Glass, two of the founders of 20 Summers, which runs the Hawthorne Art Barn Summer Program. They've been working hard to keep the barn open to artists and the public. Thank you both. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Same here.
Thank you. And just to say thank you to WCAI because you've been there with us right from the start, and that's truly appreciated. So thank you.
You're welcome.
You are definitely one of our favorite partners.
Oh, well, thank you, Julia. I appreciate it. We have a lot of respect for the barn and for the work that you're doing. So good luck this season.
Thank you.
I'm Sean Corcoran. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.